Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com podcast. I'm Ben.
And I'm Kai.
We're on podcast number 51 today. It's Wednesday, November 16th, 2011. And I'm very happy that Kai's back with me. Everybody say hi to Kai. Tell her how much you missed her. It's been a whole week. We can't hear you.
Say it louder. Speak up. Talk right into the iPod. You have a little bit of a Bob Dylan thing there. 51. This is Wednesday.
Oh, boy.
That's what happens when you get old and start growing your hair out.
Yeah. Oh, boy. So, one thing that I wanted to mention is a little thing and we were having some fun with, a little blipvert in the news that comes to us from Boulder, Colorado. Evidently, all crime has been taken care of in Boulder, Colorado, and there's nothing for the city council and the police and all the local thugs to do. So they've decided to crack down on the evil bicyclists who are speeding through
intersections?
Yeah, intersections, going way too fast through those intersections on there. Those stinking bicyclists with their speedster mobiles, you know.
They're probably in bicycle gangs. They probably go cruising around, speeding, wearing leather jackets.
Oh, boy.
They probably got knuckle spikes on their gloves, and as they speed past pedestrians, they reach out and hit them. Those bicycle gangs are vicious.
So evidently, the problem of bicycles going through crosswalks too fast is such a severe problem that we need more nanny government telling the bicyclists how fast they can go. It's like, okay, if you're walking in a crosswalk and someone hits you with a bicycle, how is that different than walking through a crosswalk and being hit by any other vehicle? Mm-hmm. It's always the vehicle's fault if the pedestrian's in a crosswalk. Mm-hmm. So how do you need more regulations on the same issue? Mm-hmm. You know, what if a turtle hits you in a crosswalk? Should we make regulations against turtles? Mm-hmm. You know, it's stupid. Like, we're just going to make more regulations, and that'll solve everything.
And the problem is, you know, In a legal system like we have, you have these professional lawyers who it is their entire job to nitpick through the wording of laws to get people off of these charges.
And the same lawyers are the ones writing the laws to begin with.
Yeah. You know, so it's no longer, you know, you're driving your bicycle recklessly and you're endangering pedestrians. Mm-hmm. We can't just accept that.
Or you actually hit someone.
Right.
And so an act has taken place, therefore we will punish that act.
Right.
Or we will make you pay the damages for that act. No. You have the potential of something that might happen under certain circumstances, so now we're going to look for a way to try to fine you for it, whether you actually did any harm or not.
And what happens with this is now all of a sudden, okay, there's this 8-mile-an-hour speed limit on bicyclists. Well, how do you know? Yeah. I mean, bicycles don't come equipped with a speedometer, so you have to buy a bicycle GPS to tell you how fast you're going. And if you can't afford that, well...
Or it's up to a cop to estimate how fast you're going through. And it's 8 miles an hour. It's not 5, and it's not 10. It's 8 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. Now, can you show me anything, any measuring device that has that kind of accuracy?
And now we're basically telling the police that they need to speed radar bicyclists.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm not comfortable with somebody aiming a radar gun at me in my car when I'm surrounded with metal and glass. Mm-hmm. You know, what happens when you aim that at a person?
Yeah. Well, and the accuracy thing, too. Those get thrown out of court all the time.
Yeah.
Because you go in with a good attorney, and he says, the first thing he says is, okay, what's the documentation on when the last time this device was calibrated? Mm-hmm. And the local authorities just go, ba-da, 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 ba-da. And, you know, so the thing gets tossed out.
Yep.
Or You know,
we see that all the time because, you know, we have a GPS. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the speed that the GPS says you're going and you look at the speed your speedometer says you're going, they're always, you know, it can be up to 5 miles an hour difference.
You can change what your speedometer says by just shifting to a different brand of tire.
Mm-hmm.
The different size of the tire on your car can determine a different speed rating on your speed reading on your mm-hmm. speedometer. Here's the very last line of this article that tells about this is just a crack up. Where am I at? I'm on DenverCBSLocal.com. Okay, so the very last, actually the last couple of lines, I'm going to read it for you. Some cyclists feel, I'm giving it a dramatic voice. Some cyclists feel that the 8 mile per hour limit is too slow. No, see, that's not the issue.
Yeah.
The issue is not whether it's 8 miles or 9 miles or 10 miles. That's not the issue. The issue is you're putting a speed limit on bicycles through mm-hmm. intersections.
Mm-hmm.
Come on.
Yeah, now you have this person on a bicycle who's worried about what speed he's going through an intersection.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of worrying about, hey, I'm on a bicycle and there are cars around me, maybe I should try to not get killed.
Besides that, if he has some magical way of determining his speed and recording it to protect himself in court, and then he hits some little old lady, all he's got to mm-hmm. do is say, look, I was doing 8 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm covered. The law. I was doing the law.
Yep.
The crazy old lady shouldn't have gotten my way, mm-hmm. you know. But so the specific speed that they're going to put the law at doesn't matter. That's not the point. And it's just like the media to set up a straw man like that and to try to distract your attention by giving a false argument. It's not whether or not it's 8 miles or 9 miles or 10 miles. It's the fact that you're putting a speed limit on bicycles mm-hmm. going through an intersection. Anyway, let me regress this.
And as a car driver,
yeah,
go fast. Go,
yeah.
Bicycle. Get out of my way.
Yeah, the faster the bicycle gets out of the intersection, the better off for everybody.
Right.
And the law already exists to honor the pedestrian in the crosswalk.
Yeah.
So what do you need another law for? And the article answers that for us. I'll reread it. Some cyclists feel the 8 mile per hour limit is too slow. Others say they would support the speed limit, including one man who was hit by another cyclist. And so they find this idiot who walked in front of another bicycle, and this is his statement. This is cyclist Larry Ardito. Sorry, Larry, if I butcher your name, but this is what you get for being so stupid to talk to the media. Anyway, so here's what Larry Ardito says. I don't have a problem with that. He's referring to the speed limit. I don't have a problem with that. Sometimes people just don't slow down or obey the signs. Really? So what should we do? Put up another sign and make another law?
Mm-hmm.
There's somebody who's speeding and they're ignoring the crosswalk and they're ramming into a pedestrian. And yet if we just had one more sign, they wouldn't have done that.
And, you know, it's not like we're talking about cars or semi-trucks or, you know, I could have a cyclist going as fast as he could pedal and he could hit into me and I would get up and I would slap him and then I would walk away. And I mean, I understand that there are fragile people out there, little old ladies and people with strollers and,
mm-hmm.
you know, but the vast majority of time, a bicyclist crash doesn't even result in, you know, it scrapes and bruises.
Uh-huh. Even when they have those massive ugly crashes at the Tour de France, when mm-hmm. like 20 bikes pile on top of each other.
It's pronounced Tour de France.
Tour de France. Speaking of foreign countries,
the foreigners.
Did you happen to see what the Australian government did to the Australian people?
No.
This week, I think it was Tuesday, the announcement came out that Australia... Okay, let me back the story up. The U.S. has been attempting to put U.S. military bases in Australia for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Australia was very happy that after World War II, the U.S. was essentially asked to leave Australia, and the U.S. actually followed through on that. Because Australia, for some odd reason, the people of Australia don't like occupying American forces in their country.
Right.
Imagine that. You know, we'd just love to have a bunch of Chinese forces occupying America, wouldn't we? Why won't they want American forces occupying their country? Anyway, so Australia was able to get the U.S. out of Australia. That's a rare feat. Because after all, we're still in Japan, we're still in Germany,
mm-hmm.
we're still occupying England.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Australia gets us out.
Korea.
Gets, Vietnam. Yeah.
Well, not Vietnam.
Not Vietnam.
We ran. But Korea.
So Australia, after much effort, gets the U.S. military out of Australia, and years go by. And then the U.S. starts putting pressure on the Australian government to let us put new bases back in Australia. And the Australian people are like, no, right? And the Australian politicians are like, we guarantee. That's my Australian accent. Evidently, Australians are from like Tennessee and Alabama and places. We guarantee. That's Australia. So the Australian government officials are guaranteeing that that U.S. bases will, U.S. military bases will not come to Australia.
Mm-hmm.
So yesterday, yeah, a Marine base, a U.S. Marine base is opening on Australia. Bump, bump. But it's okay. You know why? Because the politician says, no, no, no. It's not bases.
No, and we said no U.S. bases allowed.
I promised you no bases.
It's just one. One massive, giant one.
We're taking over Perth. Oh, boy. So they're going to have a Marine base in Australia. So Australia is yet another country that the U.S. is occupying.
I find it really funny. You know, a couple weeks ago, I think it was, my Facebook feed just blew up with people. Oh, I'm so happy my vote for Obama wasn't wasted. He's bringing home the troops from Iraq and you know, yay! And I said at the time, I was like, look, if we're ending that war,
mm-hmm.
fantastic. Those troops aren't coming home.
Right.
He'll find someplace else to stick them.
Yeah. Well, the embassy alone houses something like 10,000 military personnel, yeah. not including the staff.
Yeah.
But like 10,000 military are assigned just to the embassy alone. Yeah. It's a massive compound.
And then we hear this week that they're taking all of those troops from mm-hmm. Afghanistan and Iraq
mm-hmm.
and sticking them in the South Pacific to wage a Cold War on China.
Oh, on China, sure, yeah.
Because that's better.
Well, and they're not really reducing troop numbers in Afghanistan or Iraq. What they're doing is, they're doing two things. They're renaming troops. So let's say there's a... let's say there's a group of units of military that are in Iraq and they're considered combat troops.
Mm-hmm.
So then with the stroke of a pen, they're now called support troops.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're not occupying anymore.
Yep.
We've removed the combat troops from Iraq.
Yep.
Now the same troops are in the same camps doing the same functions.
Yep.
But they're no longer called combat troops. What does that mean? That means we just cut their pay.
Yeah.
That's all that means.
Yeah,
they're in there
still,
doing the same job for less money.
They're still getting shot at. They're still getting
the same
bombed,
risks,
you know.
Everything. But now it's not combat pay because they're not combat troops. They're support troops.
Right.
And then the other thing that we do is we actually do remove some troops. But if we remove, let's say, 1,000 troops, we literally hire 1,000 private security personnel using tax money
mm-hmm.
at a higher wage
mm-hmm.
and put them in there doing the same job.
Yep.
And these are still Americans. They're mostly veterans that have just recently come out of the military.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing the exact same thing as they did, except now they don't quite have as good of technical support if they get into a real serious mess.
Mm-hmm. And they have higher pay.
and they have a higher pay. And not only that, it actually costs the taxpayers more because the military is still going to need personnel to watch over the people that are watching over the people. Mm-hmm. And then we have to hire the contract company, and then we have to hire the individual private security people.
Yep.
So this is a boom for the private security industry.
And you still have the bases there. So all of the people who are doing service work on the bases stay mm-hmm. there.
And the same thing's going on in Afghanistan. They're not actually reducing the number of Americans there doing a specific job. All they're doing is reclassifying them, cutting their pay, and if they do remove somebody, they just replace them with private security. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and when we lie, the American government, I don't, but the American government lies to everyone, and we all just nod our big, dumb, empty heads and mm-hmm. go, yeah. The president's doing what he said. He's mm-hmm. getting us out of the war.
And I love it because, you know, the left was screaming bloody murder mm-hmm. at the fact that President Bush was using private security.
Yeah, yeah.
They were like, you're putting mercenaries in there.
Yeah,
and
yeah, any discussion of the private security was use the word mercenary mm-hmm. by the left.
And now...
Now it's okay.
Now it's fine. Well, it's private security. It's fine.
Obama's fulfilling his promises.
It's like the private security that you surround yourself with when you're walking out of the airport to your limo. You're just like that.
That was a Patti LaBelle. Petty.
Just call her Petty.
That's a Patti LaBelle reference to her having her goons beat up some poor student that happened to be talking on the phone and wandered too close to her limo. And then the other story on the Patti LaBelle thing, evidently some crazed New Yorker allowed her evil little child to walk too close to the holy LaBelle. And so Patti LaBelle like threw water on him and started screaming at him and attempted to hit the lady because her child was out of control in the presence of the LaBelle. And this is American justice.
Mm-hmm. And both times the cops were like, yeah, we're not going to do anything.
Uh-huh.
You know, if I had done that...
Mm-hmm. Taser time!
Yeah!
Oh, man. Let's shift over before we start going off on other pop divas and their antics. How many times do you think you could get arrested for drunk driving, driving backwards down to the LA freeway, getting busted with various drugs in your possession, and still be able to, you know, have your hands slapped like the different Hollywood...
And keep your job.
Yeah, keep your job, have your hands slapped a little bit, give some kind of a work program where you don't actually have to go to a real jail. You know, and we see that constantly mm-hmm. with these celebrities because, oh, they're celebrities. Mm-hmm. They can do that. Mm-hmm. You know? Let Wesley Snipes one time miss his tax payment, though, and the whole world changes. Hey, that's taxes. We don't mess around with that. Drive down the freeway backwards all you want, you know, but, hey.
Pay us our money.
You better be paying the money to the government. Otherwise, you're going to jail. Okay, I said let's avoid that. Let's not go in that direction. Then I just went right in that direction. Oh, boy. Okay, so here's another thing that I kind of ranted on yesterday's podcast about this. It was all over the Drudge Report for a couple of days. The headline read, Newt on top. And it had various pictures of Newt, one of which, I wanted to Photoshop it so bad. This picture of Gingrich was just, I wanted to Photoshop it so bad, but I resisted because I'm what do you call that? Where you're in recovery and you're reformed and you're no longer, you know, I used to do a lot of Photoshopping for places like,
I don't know. All I can get is, the scene in Oscar where he's like, I don't do that anymore.
I would terminate her immediately. I can't do that anymore. All I can do is fire her. Oh, boy. Obscure Oscar references. Yeah. I used to do a lot of Photoshopping of websites like FARC.com and places like that where there's just almost no standard of behavior and you can do anything. And there was this Newt picture that's been floating around for a few days that I wanted to go after him so bad. But it would have been in such bad taste that I think Quakers would have shown up at my house and demanded I turn in my Quaker papers or whatever, you know, if I had done that. It was just terrible. But anyway.
We'll need to see your hat.
Give us your hat. Give us those suspenders. Come on. We're going to have to cut your beard now.
We're going to have to confiscate the beard.
Oh, boy. Anyway, so Newt on top. Now, if you actually go and you find out what they're talking about, like here's a different story from Bloomberg. And at least Bloomberg uses a better headline. Republican Party candidates in four-way dead heat. And then you go on and read it. It says that the Bloomberg News poll shows Kaine at 20%, Paul at 19%, Romney at 18%, and Gingrich at 17%. Gingrich evidently is on top, according to their math.
Well, you know, when you're using made-up numbers, why not? We'll put 17 ahead of 20. Sure, it doesn't matter. They're just numbers.
Oh, boy. Let me pull up Statistician's Blues. This reminds me of a song by comedian Todd Snyder that's called The Statistician Blues. I'm going to read a few lines of it here. It says, they say 3% of the people use 5 to 6% of their brain, 97% use 3%, and the rest goes down the drain. I'll never know which one I am, but I'll bet you my last dime, 99% think with 3% 100% of the time. 64% of all the world's statistics are made up right there on the spot, and 82.4% of the people believe those statistics, whether they're accurate statistics or not. And then he goes on to say, I don't know what you believe, but I know there is no doubt. I need another double shot of something 90 proof because I got too much to think about. Anyway, Todd Snyder's a hoot. I like Todd Snyder. There's some YouTube of him attempting to sing that song, and the words are really difficult to chalk your way through, and especially after Todd's had some liquid lubricant. There are some YouTubes of him trying to sing that where he's just really messing it up. And then there's one where it's clear that he's lip syncing to the recording of it, because he's probably had the problem before, and so he's going to fix it by just playing a recording.
You can't lip sync unless you know the words.
And unless you're somewhat sober. Anyway, Todd Snyder's funny. If you get a chance, free advertising for Todd Snyder. If whatever city you're in, if Todd Snyder comes to a comedy club near you, go see him. He is funny. Okay, but so we have this four-way dead heat that Bloomberg talks about with Kaine, Paul, Romney, and Gingrich. Amazing.
Which, you know, I find it really, really funny that they even talk about statistics and things at this point like they matter.
Yeah.
Because they don't. You know, those numbers right now have absolutely no bearing on who actually gets elected.
Yeah. It is funny, though, I should mention this. Now, here we have Bloomberg saying that these four are in a virtual dead heat. Mm-hmm. And yet the Republican debate that was, what was that, Sunday or Monday night? I can't remember. I think it was Sunday. Whenever the last Republican debate was, mm-hmm. There was 60 minutes televised and 90 minutes of actual debate time. Mm-hmm. And in that 90 minutes, Ron Paul got 98 seconds.
Wow.
Now, if he's in a virtual dead heat...
Hey, that's 98 seconds more than he got the last time he ran.
Probably true. Oh, boy. But, if they... Here's a thought. Let's assume there's a lot of indicators that Ron Paul has a lot of support. Mm-hmm. And Herman Kaine, there's one thing I saw with Herman Kaine. He was trying for a long time to try to get, because he has this 999 tax plan of his. And he was trying to do a fundraiser thing where he was able to raise $999,000 mm-hmm. in a fundraiser. This is a ex-Federal Reserve chairman, Herman Cain, by the way. Not at all a Washington insider.
Right.
Not at all part of the notorious 1%, right?
Right.
Oh, no, he's just
professional corporate goon.
Yeah, exactly.
Herman Cain.
Oh, no, he's a businessman. Yeah, he's a businessman like Ben Bernanke is a businessman. Anyway, beside the point.
Or so, the CEO of GE or the CEO yeah. of Monsanto.
Yeah. So Cain is trying to raise a little under $1 million. And he puts on this ad campaign and is trying to raise $1 million. Ron Paul puts a thing on Facebook
mm-hmm.
and says, hey, we need $1 million on the 23rd or whatever. And bam, he's got $1 million on the 23rd. And the media doesn't say squat about that.
Mm-hmm.
And so we look and we see that there is this huge underlying support of Ron Paul. You look at how much military donations go to Ron Paul. You look at how many individual donations go to Ron Paul. And how many massive corporate donations go to these other candidates?
Mm-hmm.
Well, that indicates that there's a lot of actual people who will go down and vote for mm-hmm. Ron Paul. I think it was CBS, or it might have been NBC. I think it was CBS that put an online poll on to see who won the last debate,
mm-hmm.
and immediately it was like 98% Ron Paul. So they shut the poll down and took it off the. Off the internet because they said, well, clearly something's wrong. You know,
yeah.
Clearly this can't be. How is that? Because we only gave him a few seconds to speak. How could he possibly have won the debate? We didn't let him talk. Well, actually, to debate a politician, just let them talk and
yeah.
then you just shake your head and go, uh-uh.
Yeah.
You win.
Yeah.
Because they're lying.
You don't even have to make a noise. You just have to raise your eyebrows and point at them.
Yeah. Like, you believe this? Like, oh, my.
And this is what the politician says.
So mm-hmm. under...
And what are your closing statements? He said them!
So under the circumstances where... Let's just say... we can clearly see that Ron Paul has this huge grassroots support. And the other candidates only have the mainline party support, mm-hmm. the East Coast machine, so to speak, and the corporate support. So the people, the actual voters, the people who are going to walk into the booths and pull the trigger, those guys, what happens if it becomes obvious that that kind of support is for Ron Paul? And he's still only in the primary elections, only gets 8 or 10%,
mm-hmm.
and these other clowns win, and Mitt Romney or Gingrich or Cain or any of these other clowns, they win the nomination easily,
mm-hmm.
totally defeat Ron Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Will that be enough to show everybody that the elections are fake?
Yeah.
They have been fake. They always were fake.
Yeah.
They've been fake since Washington rolled out barrels of rum or whiskey to bribe people with.
Yeah.
The elections have always been fake in the U.S.
Yeah.
There's never been a time when it was real.
The idea that you could actually have a democracy, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, not that we do.
Mm-hmm.
We don't.
No.
We have... the Electoral College is there specifically to prevent,
mm-hmm.
you know, the commoners electing somebody undesirable.
Yeah, and the popular vote on several occasions has gone the opposite direction.
Mm-hmm.
And they go with the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we're not advocating a democracy because democracy is just basic communism.
Mm-hmm.
But to pretend we have it,
yeah.
to pretend that, oh, you know, we're a democratic country, we have elections, the people choose.
And it's funny because they not only say it is your right to vote,
mm-hmm.
they say if you don't vote, you're a bad person.
Yeah.
You're not
your
doing
moral,
your duty.
Your moral obligation to
yeah.
vote. It's your duty, yeah.
You know, I hear we just had an election day last week, and I heard constantly all day. Mm-hmm. You know, well, if you don't vote, then you don't get to complain about things afterwards.
I was ranting about that yesterday on yesterday's podcast.
Yeah.
Someone comes up to you and sticks a gun in your face and robs you.
Yeah.
And if you're not involved in the robbery, you don't have a right to complain about it.
Yeah.
We're being robbed. Our tax dollars are taken from us against our will. Mm-hmm. We are robbed continually, and if we resist, they will kill us. Mm-hmm. I have a right to complain whether or not I involve myself in the robbery.
Right. If two people come up to you and they say, hi, one of us is going to rob you, but you can choose which one.
Yeah.
And you say, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to give you my permission.
I'm not going to justify your robbery by giving my permission.
Then, you know, you don't... Oh, well, then you don't get to say anything because you didn't choose.
Yeah.
If you got robbed by the wrong person, you don't get to complain. No, of course I get to complain.
And what's amazing is you almost never see any kind of justification for a goofy statement like that.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, if you don't vote, you can't complain. Explain that to me. How does that work? Well, it works like this. If you don't vote, you can't complain. No, explain to me the logic of how you come to this conclusion.
Right.
If you don't vote, you can't complain. It reminds me of, it's got what plants crave. What are electrolytes? It's what plants crave.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, there's this disconnect of how a person comes to a conclusion, mm-hmm. and why they believe what it is they believe.
Well, it's brainwashing.
It is, yeah, actually. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's laziness on the part of the electorate, too. It's laziness just, well, I don't want to have to think. Mm-hmm. I have to think? Mm-hmm. You know, well, I was never taught to think in school. Why should I have to think now?
Yeah. My husband voted, and he got really upset because they had this one, and they do this all the time. They have this one, bill or whatever, that the way they worded it, you had to choose the opposite of what you wanted.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a regular trick.
You know? So they say, like, oh, this is to fund a fire department, mm-hmm. except it's... You have to vote no if you want to fund the fire. And it's really confusing. And they do that a lot.
Yeah, they like to do that with school levies.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, the school levy hoax is really cute. Because here's what you do. You have, now I've observed this here in Ohio. What they do is the school will let everybody know that they're desperate. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to cut off all busing. They're going to have to cut the buses if we don't get this school levy passed. Or we're going to have to lay off all the janitors. Or we're going to have to...
Shut down the football team band.
Yeah.
Or the art department.
Yeah, or the ROTC or whatever that school, whatever is important to that school, that's what they'll threaten. We're going to have to cut back the baseball team or whatever. If we don't get this levy passed, or we're going to have to lay off these choice favorite teachers who are lowest on the seniority list or whatever. They never, you know, it's funny. They never say we're going to cut the administrator's salary, who is currently making over $400,000 a year. Mm-hmm. We're going to cut him back to like $380,000. They don't say that.
Right.
They don't mention the fact that the administrator is making like 6 times, 7 times, 10 times what the teachers or what the janitors or what the school what the bus drivers are making. We're going to cut the bus drivers, even though we could cut half the administrator's salary and hire twice as many bus drivers. No, we're not going to do that. We don't want to ever touch the administrator's salary or his 9 secretaries. We're not going to touch any of their salaries. But anyway, so here's how the scam works. So they'll threaten something like we're going to have to cut off buses if we don't get this levy passed. And then the citizens vote down the levy anyway. Mm-hmm. So then they, now they've already designed, like here in our town, and you can see this pattern in other towns as well, they design this massive one school where they send everybody from a whole huge community to this one massive super school.
And they design it to where there's always just one entrance.
Yeah. So that it's a huge bottleneck in front of the thing, Columbine. Mm-hmm. And so when you take that many kids and you cram them into one institutionalized facility like that, Columbine, mm-hmm. and then you start to wonder, well, I wonder why children are reacting the way they are, Columbine. Mm-hmm. I mean, am I being too subtle, Columbine?
Because you're treating them like they're already criminals.
Yeah.
And the thing with humans is, when you treat a human like a criminal, mm-hmm. a human becomes a criminal.
Yeah. Oddly enough, isn't that strange? So now you've got all the kids crammed into one big mega school that has one main entrance, and then you cut off the buses and you tell all the parents they have to drive their kids to school. Mm-hmm. And some schools won't allow kids to ride their own bicycles to school. Mm-hmm. So this forces the parents to drive, and it just crams that one street full of traffic and blocks the whole city, and then the school sits back and says, see,
yeah.
that's why you need to pass this levy, yep. and the next time it'll pass. Otherwise, we'll do this again.
Yep.
And we'll cut off your high school football, too. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of threats they make. Now, here at the school where we're at, the football stadium that we have at the local high school here in Springboro, Ohio, is better than the original football stadium that the Cleveland Browns used when the original, I can't remember his name, but his name was Brown, but I can't remember his first name. That it was
Cleveland?
Cleveland, yeah, no. but the original.
It's just a coincidence that they happened to live in Cleveland.
Yeah. The original owner of the Cleveland Browns and the stadium that he built for them and they played in for years and years and years, our football stadium at our high school is better than that stadium.
And I've lived in Texas. Our stadium here is nothing. Mm-hmm. Nothing.
So that's the game. You know, they will threaten, they will shut down the traffic in your town. They will just come back year after year after year with another levy over and over and over if you don't
and
give it to them.
And it's specifically great in this town because the way that they've designed the town, mm-hmm. there's one road through it.
Yeah.
And that road is where the high school is at, and yeah. the junior high, and a couple of the elementary schools.
Yeah, and they're in the process of they wanted to make one big, massive elementary school, and they kind of got shot down, and then they had to reassess that and say, okay, well, we'll make like five. Mm-hmm. And then they said, well, yeah, well, we'll actually just make three, and then we'll make two, and well, we're planning on one. Mm-hmm. You know? Because the process never ends.
Right.
These people never stop. They just they take one bite at a time, and if you complain about the bite that they took, they'll take mm-hmm. a smaller bite this time, mm-hmm. and then next time they'll make up for it.
Yep.
That's, you know, it never ends. Anyway, but, you know, they shouldn't be sending them to school anyway.
Right.
I feel horribly guilty having, we homeschooled, for any new listeners, Kai is my daughter.
Hello. I waved at the microphone.
They can't see you. When our kids were little, my wife and my kids were little, we homeschooled as much as we possibly could. We did private school when it was available to us. We homeschooled as much as we could. But unfortunately, part of the time we homeschooled, and I can say it now because my children are all adults and the goons of the state can't take them away from me. But a good portion of the homeschooling we did was completely illegal.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't do any of the stuff, filing with the state and getting the right curricula.
Yep.
We didn't do those things. I just I built desks and we set up stuff in the house and we just made our own curriculum and we just took off and went to the state capitol and watched the legislators and talked about it and walked around the capitol area, went to other state capitol. We just did what we wanted to do and made school the way we wanted to make it.
Mm-hmm.
And we did that as much as we could. But at some point later on, it became financially absolutely necessary that I had to stick my kids back in public schools.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the things in my life that I wish that I had not have gone that way. I hate the fact that my kids had to spend way too much time in public schools. If I can... There are many things that I've done in my life that were bad, that were evil things, evil behavior.
Mm-hmm.
Sending my kids to public school is probably the thing that I feel the most guilty about. But I felt like there was nothing I could do about it.
Right.
You know? If I had resisted the state at that time, you know, the state would have come and taken them away. Because right. where we're at here in Ohio, the level of oppression is worse mm-hmm. than what we were facing in California on that issue. Mm-hmm. In California, we were just doing our own thing.
And certainly worse than Nevada.
Yeah, when we were in Nevada, it was like, this is what we're going to do. And I put you guys in school. If you recall, I put you guys in school in Nevada for like a month or something.
Well,
like that.
We had moved almost at the end of a school year, but not quite.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
we finished out a school year in Nevada.
Yeah.
Horrible school.
Yeah.
Just terrible. And they shut it down mm-hmm. after we left. Mm-hmm. They closed the school down completely. They condemned it. And,
wow.
And built a new school, and all the kids went to the new school.
But after those few weeks in that school, that's where I said, all right, that's it, no more. Mm-hmm. And we just pulled you guys out and did the homeschool. We didn't ask anybody's permission. We didn't file any paperwork with the state. We didn't use any, you know, state-authorized curriculum or none of that stuff. We mm-hmm. just, you know, all right, here's school. This is how you make a frog gig. All right, you're going to have to learn your multiplication tables.
Yeah, that was fun. Because you guys were working at the same time.
Yeah. Actually, I was working a job trying to run a business. You know, so that's two jobs that I was working. And Cindy was working full-time and going to college full-time. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that it was some rough times. But we still, and somehow.
Unfortunately, if you're planning on homeschooling, you should probably not leave the answer book where the kids can find it.
Well, how are you going to find out the answers? You know, this is a stupid thing about schools.
You know, it's funny because I learned a lot of English, and I learned a lot of history, and mm-hmm. I learned a lot of science. Math, not so much. Because the math, I would just be like, all right, well, oh, look, those are the answers. I should put that one down as wrong.
You know, they can't see your hands. But, you know, it's a funny thing because if you're, let's say you work for, I don't know, name a big corporation. Name any big corporation. Yeah. it's the opposite side of the same joke. It's like, Camel. Now think of something not Camel. Okay, so I'll make up a corporation. Let's say IBM. Let's say you work for IBM.
Okay.
And now you're there at your cubicle working for IBM, doing whatever your IBM thing that is that you do.
Making a noose to kill yourself?
Yeah. Because that's preferable to working for IBM. So you're there at your desk thinking about maybe tomorrow you're thinking, you know, tomorrow I think I'll bring in a nice big raw fish and fillet it out right here on my desk. Let's just say that's going through your mind.
And you unscrew my cubicle so I can have a window view.
So your boss comes up and he says, yeah, you know, I'm going to need for you to give me those reports by Tuesday, you know. Mm-hmm. Well, what he really means is he wants you to copy someone else's work.
Right.
He wants information, and he doesn't want you to get it yourself. He wants you to copy it from someone else, because mm-hmm. that's what you do in business. Mm-hmm. If you're working at, you know, I spent years at GE. You're working at GE, and they say, hey, we need to find out how much it costs us to bring this part from India and get it here to Cincinnati, mm-hmm. as opposed to if we got that part from Turkey mm-hmm. and brought it to Cincinnati. Okay, now how am I going to find this information out? I look on my neighbor over my neighbor's shoulder and I copy. Mm-hmm. See, that's how I find out this stuff. I don't just pull it out of my head.
Right.
I don't sit down and spend hours in calculation. I call up the guy in India and I say, "Let me see your work."
Yeah.
And I call up the guy in what was the other country? Turkey. And I say, hey, let me see your paper. Let me yeah. see your work. And you cheat. But that's not called cheating in industry. That's right. not what in business. That's not cheating.
Right.
This is just finding the answer. Okay, so if I'm in a classroom setting and the teacher says, if a train leaves Cleveland going 48 miles per hour and it drives 6 hours or it goes 6 hours west, and another train is coming from Chicago, and about this time your mind's going.
Yeah.
And so then the teacher says, Bill, what's the answer? And you're like, and you look over at your neighbors, and the neighbors work the whole thing out on paper, and you're like, well, it looks like 22.
Yeah.
In every other setting in life, that's not cheating.
Yeah.
But in a school, in a classroom, that's cheating. How is it cheating to look on your neighbor's work or to use a calculator?
Yeah.
Because isn't the calculator doing the work for you? And so, more and more schools allow calculators.
Mm-hmm.
But still, a lot of schools don't allow calculators, especially lower level mm-hmm. schools. They want you to learn how to do the work. But again, is it so important to know how to do the work, or is it just important to know what the answer is?
Right.
Because I don't need to know how to make a light bulb to turn the light bulb on.
Right.
It's not necessary that I know how to gather tungsten and how to, you know, carbonize tungsten to get it to make a filament. That's not necessary.
And even if you wanted to learn that,
mm-hmm.
If you wanted to learn how to make a light bulb,
mm-hmm.
you wouldn't have to sit down and make a light bulb from scratch and figure it out yourself.
Right.
You can go copy somebody else's work.
And see how they did it.
Right.
Then you can make your own light bulb. Because if the rest of life functioned like schools teach us to behave,
mm-hmm.
we'd be all reinventing the wheel every single day.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be like giving some charcoal and some flint and a piece of metal, a piece of iron to a kid and saying, all right, warm the house,
mm-hmm.
you know, show us fire.
Mm-hmm.
And the kid's like, I don't know how to figure this out. Of course not. That's not how humans function. This is not how progress is done.
Yeah.
This is how the state thinks.
Yeah.
You know, this is how schools are designed to keep children stupid.
Yep.
But that's not how society functions. If a child has an interest in math, the child will learn math.
Mm-hmm.
And if the child has no interest in math, guess what? The child's not learning math.
Yeah. And it's not your job to... I really feel like it's not your job to teach a child.
Right.
I feel like it's your job to let the child learn.
Mm-hmm. And if the child needs some specific help
mm-hmm.
to learn something that it's interested in, then you can do everything you can to facilitate mm-hmm. that. But if you just start trying to force a kid to learn, you know, just
especially
raw facts.
Using the method of sit down, shut up, listen, write these notes.
Yeah.
That's a horrible way to learn.
Yeah. Ah, well, that was a long, drawn-out anti-school rant, wasn't it?
I like those. Those are fun.
Well, schools are so illogical, though. I mean, the whole mm-hmm. process just seems so nonsensical.
Mm-hmm.
You take a child. A child probably in a true nursery setting where children are just interacting with each other. If you had some way of grading the amount of information that they learn within a specific amount of time, that's almost infinite,
mm-hmm.
you know, learning new skills and how to interact with each other. And these things are extremely complex.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the kid just picks right up on it.
Yeah.
And then you take that kid and you, like you just now said, you cram them in a desk. You make them sit still. You make them hold their head up and look towards the front. You make them ask permission to go to the bathroom or get a drink of water.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they can't eat when they get hungry. They have to only eat when it's regimented and when it's allowed. And then they only eat what they're allowed. You know, you literally treat them like a prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
And then you expect them to come out of the other end of that meat grinder in some kind of a civilized way mm-hmm. with an education.
And I find it funny because people assume that without industrialized schooling,
mm-hmm.
that children would never know anything.
Yeah.
And when in reality, I mean, industrialized schooling happened at a specific point in history.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go and look at children from before that...
Yeah.
They could still read.
Yeah.
They could still write. They could still do basic math.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what? People are like, oh, well, they didn't know algebra and science.
I don't know algebra.
Go talk to any 30-year-old. They can't tell you anything other than reading, writing, basic math, basic history, basic science. The same exact things
mm-hmm.
that an unschooled... And not unschooling in the modern, you mm-hmm. know, fashionable, yeah. but actually did not attend school
mm-hmm.
pre-industrialized schooling.
Right.
those kids knew that exact same stuff too.
Here's a crushing blow to everybody who wants to force their kids into college, straight out of high school into college so that they can get a career.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I poked around. I did. I served my time. I served my time in school. I went through the whole public school thing and graduated early. I skipped ahead. So, you know, I actually got my real diploma, not a GED, but I got it ahead of time because I hated school and I wanted to get out as quick as possible. So I took whatever classes I needed to take and just, you know, to get through it and get it done with as quick as possible.
See, I hated school too and wanted to get out as quickly as possible.
So you just left.
I just left.
Hey, I'm done with this. You guys handle the paperwork. I'm out of here.
Yeah, I don't think I'm going to go anymore.
It's kind of like Office Space. Yeah. You know, I'm not going to. Anyway, so after school, after I got out of school, I really didn't want any more of school.
Right.
But because of job requirements and because of misunderstanding of things like theology and stuff, I ended up taking some college classes, in spite of the fact that I hated every minute of it. But I didn't really learn much from those.
Mm-hmm.
Which
is probably good.
Yeah. And I ended up, in the end, I ended up working in the aircraft engine industry. Highly technical engineering division where we designed, implemented, tested brand new styles of engines and brand new types of engines, testing and experimenting and developing minute little details of engine variations so that we adjusted how the fuel flows into an area or how the compressor blades, how they cut through the air and how much noise they make as they cut through the air. And the people I was working with and the groups that I was working in were doing things like designing the exhaust duct to the... There wasn't a duct. Quack, quack, quack.
Sometimes there was a duck. In you go.
In goes the duck. No more duck.
Duck proof.
Pass the duck test. That's a reference to what G actually does with the engines. They throw birds through the engines to make sure that the engines are bird proof so that you don't die when you fly in a plane. Think of that, PETA, the next time you get on a plane. Anyway,
if you've flown in a plane,
you've killed a duck. Probably a goose or a turkey.
Yeah.
Mostly they use turkeys. They use a lot of like doves and things like that too. But we ground up a lot of turkeys through the engines. But anyway, aside from the grueling part of it, but like the inlet plume of the B-2 bomber or the exhaust ductwork for the B-2 bomber, the intricate designs on how to make the air flow in ways so that you silence all the noise coming out of it. Very intricate, very high-level intellectual stuff that I was working. I was working with...
I did intellectual stuff.
Yeah. We was some smart folks. I was working with real geniuses. I mean that. Some of the people I worked with were just amazingly brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have any of those I mentioned a second ago, I can't do algebra.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm right there with guys who are calculating the decimals of, three-level supersonic sounds.
Right.
And we're calculating the decimals. Well, you know what? I have a computer. And I just enter some numbers, and then I push the button, and it tells me.
Right.
I don't need to know calculus. I don't need to know algebra.
Right.
I have a computer.
And, you know, that is a slippery slope that you have to be careful of.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a certain amount of, in the day-to-day, you know, activities, people are like, well, I don't know how, I don't need to know how to use a wood stove.
Yeah.
I just turn my stove on.
Yeah.
Well, there's an actual risk of that not being able to happen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, if things turn bad, you may need to know how to build a fire.
Right.
But if things turn bad...
You don't need to know how to make a jet engine.
Yeah. You never see anybody out in the wild thinking, you know, that there's a saber-toothed tiger about to attack, and they're like, if I could only do calculus.
Yeah. You know, they're not like, all right, the angle of this rock, and I need to project it over that tree, which is at a 45-degree... No. No.
Oh. If I only had my laptop, I could figure out what to do when this polar bear is attacking me.
You know, so I think...
Google polar bear attack.
Wiki how.
Yeah.
You know, you have to be careful and you have to learn skills that are useful and mm-hmm. practical and, yeah. you know, don't forget how to do things like... you know, cook food because you have a microwave.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's more important, really, 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 it's more important to know how to grow a pepper so that you don't die of malnutrition with the state-sponsored food mm-hmm. than it is to know how to design, you know, super aerodynamic mm-hmm. things that can move through the air at 3 times the speed of sound and not make noise.
Right.
Now, maybe there are applications where that's important.
Right.
But for an individual survival, not so much.
And you know what? If you're interested in that, if that fascinates you, yeah. go learn it. Do yeah. it. And I advocate mm-hmm. do it without the state sponsorship.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
do it without, do schooling without going to college. Mm-hmm. And you can actually... do an entire college curriculum on your own.
Yeah.
Go to a college, test out of all of the classes, and mm-hmm. they'll give you a diploma.
Yeah.
That a lot of people do that.
And there are all kinds of places on the internet where you can get information that is better than what you're going to get mm-hmm. from a college course anyway. Mm-hmm. I think I'll give Mises.org another plug because it's such a fantastic site. But that's just in reference to history and economics. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have any interest at all in history or economics, cruise over there and everything you could ever want to know mm-hmm. is there free, you know. Well, we've about hit our time limit here, so we probably ought to wrap it up.
Okay.
I mentioned yesterday, in yesterday's podcast, because of the family health things that are going on with the very important member of our family that's facing a health emergency. We never really know from one day to the next if we're going to have another podcast the next day.
Right.
So we're going to make every effort to continue to have a daily either article or podcast or interview or something. If we disappear off the scope for a couple days or whatever, you know, be patient with us. We'll be back as quick as we possibly can. We're just taking care of the things that we have to take care of. In reference to our family obligations.
So, and you can always look for updates on the Bad Quaker Facebook page, too.
Yeah, actually, that's probably because when we're on the road or when we're doing stuff, get over to to Bad Quaker Facebook. I combined bad and face and came up with Fast Quaker.
Fast Quaker!
But if you go over to Facebook and you hit the Bad Quaker, if you're not already... if you haven't liked that on Facebook, go to Facebook and do a search for badquaker.com, the words BADQAKERDOTCOM, and we're the only ones, and because nobody else would want to be called that. And, you know, because I can even update that from my phone
right.
if I need to.
If you happen to type that in and you click on something and they're talking about oatmeal, probably not us.
Yeah. Yeah, look for the big, ugly, hairy guy and not the weird, creepy, hairy guy with the cookies. Yeah. That guy is creepy, you know?
That guy, he wasn't, and then they took a page from Burger King.
Yeah.
And they made, like, that cutout that, like, was standing there when the kids yeah. were playing. And you're like,
I wonder if it's the same advertising company.
I don't know. It might be. But it's creepy, one way or the other.
Yeah, creepy Quaker. Okay, thanks a lot, folks, for listening. Keep checking back, keep listening, keep sharing with your friends. Thanks a lot. Say goodbye, Kai.
Bye, Kai.